Hi, everybody, and welcome to Dog Show Tips and Canine Chronicles, the interview chair. Today we have Brett Hamilton, and it's a great conversation with Brett Hamilton. I had such a good time, so sit back and relax and listen to Brett. He's going to tell you his story. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dog Show Tips and Canine Chronicles interview chair. Today on the chair, we have Brett Hamilton. How are you, Brett?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
Good, good. Brett's an Afghan breeder, poodle breeder. He shows his Afghans. He's a FCI judge. You've been a judge for, what did you say, 17 years?
17 years, yeah, this year.
Wow,
yeah.
That's crazy. Crazy. and he had a huge win a little while ago with Spencer. So before we get into it, first of all, how's Camilla?
She's doing all right. She's in the house putting a little girl to bed, so she's doing good.
Oh, good, good. All I ever see is videos of her and pictures of her. We've never met, so.
Never, okay.
I don't think so.
Okay. You would remember if you met him.
Tell me about your show with Spencer, though, because that was very exciting. Even all being over here, it was exciting watching, so.
Oh, the World Dog Show. Yeah, it was quite the show. He won the breed out of over 100 Afghans, which was, that was a dream. And it was quite a very cool situation. The last time the World Dog Show was in Helsinki, Matrix, that was bred by Camilla's family, won the breed there under John Reeve Newson, which was quite a memorable show too. So it was really wonderful, best of breed win by itself. And then to win the group later on was even more exciting. And we also got to represent Sweden in the World Challenge, which was nice to see the World Challenge be brought back.
He was number one dog, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he finished number one dog in Sweden last year, which was quite amazing because he missed half the year of shows. So it was a really wonderful show at the World Show. And we knew beforehand that the World Dog Show is always wonderful organized in Finland. They run amazing dog shows there. So the show itself was amazing, but to do well was really beyond our expectations. So it was wonderful. It was really great.
It looked very exciting. It looked very exciting.
So, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a picture of you two walking on. He cast such a silhouette.
That was so fun because we just won the group before the World Challenge. So I had to go straight into the World Challenge. So I got to celebrate the win in the World Challenge with Camilla. So that's why we kind of walked out a little extra happy. I was just like, can you believe what just happened? So it was great. It was so cool.
Oh, that's exciting. All right, let's get started. Tell me how, I have an idea how, but tell me how you got started in this.
I was born into the dog sport, so I had no choice.
How is your father? I haven't seen him in ages, but
they're doing okay. They're doing okay. Yeah. They're getting
I've
older.
Never met your mother. I've met your father. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, they're doing all right. I talk to them a few times a week. So I miss them a lot being so far away from Australia now living in Sweden. So it's, So I was born into the dog world.
Carry on.
Yeah.
So you were born in the dog world, of course. And yes. What, did your family already have Afghans? Is that what it was?
Yeah. So they were breeding Afghans. I think they got their first Afghan in the maybe late 70s, early 80s, when Afghans was the most popular breed in the world at the time, I imagine. So they got their first Afghan from a breeder, Lynn Schelling Watson, Sheltara Kennels. And for them, it became a champion, which was at the time pretty remarkable. Their first dog becoming an Australian champion—it was quite a big deal back then. And they kind of got the bug, I guess. And they were breeding. So when I was born in '87, so they were breeding for a number of years. But they were quite lucky though. Their first litter produced a national specialty winner under Lee Canaliso in Australia. So they hit the ground running pretty quickly. So I was very lucky to be born with some nice dogs around me.
What's your first memory of not just dogs, but of a dog show?
Of a dog show, I kind of remember packing up my action figures and going to the show. And we would have maybe friends that would have whippets, and usually they would always have baby puppies at the shows. And I have a distinct memory of bringing my action figures, hopping in the puppy pen that was set up at the show at the X Pen, and I would just play with the puppies, play with the toys, and just, you know, be a kid at the show, I guess. But that's one of my earliest memories for sure, going to the shows.
You remember your first time going into the ring showing a dog? Or even the first time playing in the backyard, pretending you're showing a dog?
So I was kind of, I wouldn't say forced, but so once a year we had the Royal Melbourne Show, which is equivalent to like Westminster or Crufts kind of thing. And we would have the junior handlers competition. So I remember once a year they would enter me in the junior handlers and just throw me in there. So we had a Whippet at the time that was just a pet dog, and but he was a wonderful junior handler dog. So they would just say, okay, it's the Royal Melbourne Show. Get out there, go in your junior handlers. And I remember they would dress me up in awful clothes, and I hate it. I never really had a good like for it at that time. But I remember being forced to do it in the beginning, which was against my will.
When did that change?
It changed around 11, 12 years old. I kind of noticed there was a lot more girls at the show than junior handlers, so it was kind of a little bit of a incentive to maybe stick around at the shows a little bit longer. I used to go to shows and bring my skateboard, and we would get there and I'd go on my skateboard, right, go into the nearest town, and you know, and then come back. But then I realized it was a little bit fun hanging around the shows, meeting friends and hanging out. And then I just thought, well, maybe I can do junior handlers. And that's when I started showing my first Afghan that was kind of mine. I would take her in junior handlers for experience because I could never beat my dad winning the breed. So I would always have knew if I'd never win the breed in the morning, I would always have the junior handlers to kind of practice in the afternoon. But it was around 11, 12 years old, I kind of started taking it a little bit more seriously.
You start getting competitive then?
Yeah, I got competitive. It was always hard to beat the girls in junior handlers. They're always so much better.
Yeah.
But I remember, I think around about 13 or 14, I did quite well as a junior handler. We had two different systems. For half the year, it was qualifications for the finals to kind of represent your state and then maybe to represent the country at Crufts. And then the other half of the year was more like a point score system. And I remember I kind of worked at the point score system. I picked out strategically certain dogs, and you could never win the class with the same breed more than twice. So I kind of planned out winning classes and then moving on to next breeds. And I was the top handler of the year for 1 year, which was my claim to fame as a junior, because I could never ever win the finals. It was always so difficult to go into those finals and keep up with all the other kids. They were so much better at me at that age.
I recall a post after Spencer won the group. You mentioned Jared in the post.
Yeah, I actually spoke to him. I think just after he won the group, and I said I still have this picture. I remember us being and at that time in the Royal Melbourne Show, they would separate the boys and the girls. So I joke with him and said that, look at us, we were the very end of the line in the boys. We weren't even against the girls, and we were still at the end of the line of the junior handlers at the Royal. So it was kind of fun to see, look where we are now. We worked our ass off for many years, and yeah, look what can happen. And it was really a fun moment to be sharing the ring with someone I grew up showing against in Australia, and I haven't seen him in many, many years. So it was a real fun moment, real fun.
Yeah, it does make it sound. It's funny because when Adam worked for me, Adam Bernard, he never won junior handling ever. The girls always beat him. I remember him going third, but he worked and worked and worked, and when it changed to him showing dogs in confirmation, he was natural at it. And he just never looked back. So
he
grew a backbone losing to all those girls.
a little bit, but also I'm still stubborn. I was a very stubborn kid. I used to only, like in the final, I would prefer to show my own dogs. So I would take an Afghan, and Afghans are not the best breed for junior handlers. There's too much work going into them for the judges to appreciate. So I remember a few times taking in Canterriers or Shelties, baiting dogs, and I got bored with it. I would win a class and I wouldn't get any satisfaction out of it. So I kind of always pushed myself taking in the Afghans in the finals, knowing I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't do as good as I wanted to. But it, for me, it was more about the experience with an Afghan in a big ring, like a final type of situation. Because back then it was hard just to get through the breed. I never got through the breed ring until I was 17, 18 years old, winning my first best of breed. So it took many years of getting the second place prize or the best opposite sex prize or whatever. So I worked hard at it.
Oh, I understand. So when was your first big win outside of juniors then?
My first big win was actually at the Royal Melbourne Show. I think I was 18 years old, and I won the group under Jackie Quiros-Cabat, and best in show fourth under Colin Molinari. And that was,
oh, wow.
And under two different Afghan people that have had Afghans. And it was a real, for me, that was my first kind of breakthrough kind of win. I did okay before winning groups here and there, but that was the first, and also specialty wins too. But that was my first all breeds win. But my first win was a little bit before that with the specialty best in show under Lotte Jorgensen from Denmark. That was the one that kind of made me realize maybe I could do well with this bitch, and it kind of pushed me forward. But definitely the Melbourne Royal was a breakthrough.
Oh yeah, for sure. So where did you go from there? So you had, did you, were you showing your own dogs at that point, or were your people asking you to show their dogs?
So when I was younger, my dad, he used to, there would be a few older, maybe older age people that there was a, I remember specifically there was a lady that had Gordon setters, and she could not run with her dogs. And my dad would always, I never agreed to it, but he would say, yeah, my son, he'll show the dog for you. So yeah, he did it all the time. I remember showing a Gordon setter, and I remember showing an Irish red and white setter. It was the only one in the country at that time. I'm sure it was. I remember just being forced. My dad would always force me. He never cared so much about junior handlers. Often they weren't really, not that they knew what was going on, but they wouldn't really be paying that close attention to the junior handler. So I never felt pressure from them when it comes to that. But when it came to helping out people, dad was always first to dob me in and say, yeah, I'm like, Brett can go.
That'll help you.
So, and I kind of appreciate it now. At the time, I did not appreciate it. I thought it was, you know, some of these Gordon said, oh, that was a little disgusting, dirty dog. It was drooling and, you know, maybe it could be pretty, yeah. You know, it could be groomed a little bit better, but it was a good experience to learn showing other breeds. It kind of opened the window a little bit for connections, I guess, meeting new people.
When did the poodles start?
The poodles, so that was a little bit later on. I don't know how did it start. I think there was a Swedish bred dog in Melbourne owned by Joe Turnley, actually bred by a former Australian who moved to Sweden, Stephen Wheeler and Anders Rossell.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they recommended or someone else recommended to the owner that, oh, Brett would be a good person to run with, to show you this poodle for her. And I don't know how I got approached, but I was just like, yeah, sure, I'll give it a go. You know, I can't groom it, but I'll give it a go. And I only showed her maybe a dozen times, but she did pretty well too. I'm pretty sure you showed the sister, I think.
Oh, it was an avatar bitch.
Yes. The only reason why I remember, because there was like an ad advertisement made, and there was the three sisters. And I just remember, you had the one, and I remember I was showing one of the others. But
showed her. She was a beautiful bitch. She won best in shows from the classes. She was fun.
Yeah. No, but so this bitch I showed, I just got real lucky, I guess, showing her, because she won the group at the Royal Melbourne Show under Carlos. Was it Carlos? Yeah, I think. Oh, no, Bruce Owen from Canada. Oh, Bruce. Bruce gave her the group at the Royal Melbourne Show, and then Carlos Renew gave her a best in show three. And that was my second or third show with this poodle that I never really showed poodles before that. So I kind of had to learn rather quickly. But so that was, I think that was about 12, 13 years ago. That was my introduction to poodles. But my real introduction was through my wife Camilla. So when she came to Australia, that's when she brought her poodle with her. So that was my.
Was she just going to show? Did she move to Australia?
So yeah, Okay, so it's a long story.
That's all right. We have time. We have time.
Okay, so so I first met Camilla at Westminster. I was actually judging the specialty in New Jersey.
I think she was there.
I think I was there judging. My dad was there as well judging. At Westminster, I saw Camilla there. She was there helping out with somebody, and I recognized her because she owned Afghans and bred Afghans, and I always admired her dogs. And I remember she, at the time, I think she had the dog Neo, which was the Matrix sire.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, that's a good way I can, opening line, I can go and talk to her, because she's very beautiful and very intimidating Swedish woman. So I kind of went up and introduced myself, and she remembered who I was. And I said, I've got press pass tickets to watch Best in Show. So we watched Best in Show, which was a really cool moment. And then that was our first meeting, and then nothing came of that. I thought maybe she might want to talk a little bit more, but no, that was our first introduction. And about a year later, I was judging in Norway. I did the national specialty for the Afghans, and she came in the ring with a beautiful dog called Carlos. And I gave her best of breed. It was the most beautiful dog. It was my most important judging assignment of my life, because I found my life partner, and I found the most breathtaking dog at the same time. So I imported her and the dog to Australia. So she came to Australia, and at the time she had a standard poodle that was bred by Charlotte Sandell, Huffish Kennels, a very famous breeder who's been quite successful. And so Camilla was handling dogs for her for a few years at that time, and learned a lot from her. And so she had her first standard poodle from her, and she brought him to Australia. So she came, I think that was 2000 and I think the end of 2012, she came to Australia. So she moved, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And you were judging at that point, but you were showing dogs together as well at that point then?
So when she moved to Australia, we co-owned the dogs together, and we campaigned the dogs together. The poodle ended up being the top dog in Australia for 2 years in a row. He won 85 best in shows in that time, which was, we did a lot of shows and campaigned really hard, and we were lucky to win a trip to the World Challenge, all expenses paid, to the Netherlands. It was the first year it moved from Orlando. And so because Uber paid for everything, we decided maybe we could go to Sweden for a few months, and we had the goal of showing at Crufts the next year. So that was kind of my introduction of moving to Sweden for the first time. And and I haven't been back home for over 10 years now.
Oh, so that you went there for a few months and you just end up staying?
Yeah. So we had the intention, we had the intentions of showing at Crufts, which was in March. And so we came in December of 2013, I think, was when we came. We settled in very fast. We were renting a nice little house, and we're living on the countryside close to Camilla's family. We opened a grooming shop, and we just really, the roots got dug in really, really quickly. So
nice.
Living in Sweden is really, it's very far away from Australia, which I don't like. I miss my family, but the opportunities over in Sweden as far as breeding and showing, and also our job to having a grooming store is quite wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I love Sweden. I've only been there a couple of times, but I've always enjoyed myself there.
Yeah.
It actually reminds me a bit of Canada. Yeah. If Canada had that much history.
No, that's true. I think Canadians are a little bit more friendly overall. Overall, Swedish people are very reserved, very truthful.
Well, I had a great time there, because I remember I couldn't sleep. So I walked downtown Stockholm in the right out. And I just walked.
Before Camilla moved to Australia, I visited Sweden for a couple of months because we were just feeling out our relationship. And I came during the summertime, and I didn't want to leave. It was just, like you said, like having daylight all night long, and the city is so beautiful in Stockholm. But I got a good taste for it then. It's a little taste, but.
And they love hockey, which works out great for me.
Yeah, no, they definitely.
Have you watched hockey now that you live there?
I've watched hockey, but I more play it on the PlayStation. I more play hockey than actually watch it.
What do you have? EA Sports?
2K. I like playing 2K. But I remember when I was a kid, there was this NHL game called Rock the Rink, and it was kind of a combat sport game, it was more fighting than playing. That was great.
I use a lot of hockey analogies when I'm teaching or when I'm talking to people, and yeah, some of them don't get them. But that's
yeah,
okay.
No, there's a few Gretzky quotes. You know, go where the puck is going. You know,
yeah. Well, exactly. So, you're breeding Afghans and standard poodles now.
Yeah, so a few years ago, we bred a couple of standard poodle litters, which produced quite well. In our first litter, we had a Best in Show winner, English champion, group winner. And then our second litter had specialty winners. From our first litter, I actually took my dog to PCA by myself, which was quite the trip, because I'm good at bathing dogs and drying dogs and brushing. I can do all that stuff, but doing the real poodle work, I cannot do. I've got
even now.
Camilla's so good at it. I think that I can let her do all the work. But I even got to go to PCA by myself, and I got second in the bred by class, which was quite the feat. For I felt
somebody
like a
help
real
you do up the dog.
Yeah, actually, Allison helped me out, and I had a whole team. It was quite the show. So I was very lucky to have so many people helping me, because they could tell I needed the help.
Every once in a while, when we were together, she'd send me off, and yeah. But I would try my best when we were at the local show together to look like, yeah, I didn't know at all what I was doing. So
yeah,
never asked me to do it.
I have a few stories when we were showing our poodle Lex in Australia. There was a couple of shows, maybe it was raining, overcast, and maybe Camilla was tired. And she's like, I don't need to do this today. We can just show the Afghans or show the other dogs and just leave the poodle out. And I'll attempt a few pieces of hairspray. And then she'd be like, Give it here. All right, I'll do it. Yeah. There was one show, I actually took him by myself. We just had a litter of Afghan puppies, and it was easier if I could just take him. I had my driver's license. She wasn't driving in Australia at that time, but she's got her license now. But anyway, so I took the dog by myself. So she pre-sprayed him at home, and I took him in the back of the station wagon, and I with the show lead on, and he was sitting up with the hair, and I was driving with one hand, holding on with the other. And I made it work. I got reserve best in show, got the points, and left. I don't think I took a photo though. I didn't want her to see what he looked like.
And Kenny Wall and I went and did the Florida circuit one time, and Allison sent a toy poodle with us.
Yeah.
Neither one of us were that adept at it yet. So we did her up. We did her up once. Put her in a big aluminum crate, left her there all weekend long. So we just take her out, fix her up. I never told Al.
No, they didn't need to know that.
Oh, well, so you've been judging, you said, you 17 years now?
Yeah, so when I was about 16, I started going to, we have breed lectures in Australia. So I would go to the hound lectures, and I would help. Each lecture, they would do two breeds, similar breeds. So 1 week it would be Afghans and Salukis, and they will bring maybe five Afghans, five Salukis. So at those lectures, they would usually need someone to help out, show some dogs for the trainees. So I think I was about 16. I started going to lectures, sitting in the back, just watching, learning, and then just showing the dogs there. And then when I was 16, I started attending the lectures kind of for myself, even though it didn't count, but I wanted to just learn as much as I could.
When does it start counting? How old do you have to 18?
18 years old, yeah. So when I turned 18, then I started, and you start with like basic confirmation, rules and regulations. So I started like anatomy classes, and I would attend those lectures. You would start ring stewarding for, you have to ring steward for X amount of shows. So I'd started ring stewarding for specialty shows and kennel club shows where I wasn't showing. And then after you fulfill all those qualifications, then you can do the written exams. And then once you've passed the written exam for all the hound breeds in Australia, we go for one group at a time. So I went for the, initially I wanted to just, you can go for one breed or two breeds if you want to, but you're kind of encouraged to go for the whole group. Yeah. So I decided to go for the whole group. And once you're 18, you do the written exams. Once you've passed all that stuff, and you fulfill all the qualifications as far as breeding and showing champions, all that stuff, then you can start judging open shows. And then you have to judge X amount of dogs.
Explain to some of my listeners might not know what an open show is.
Well, I don't think people know what they are anymore in Australia because they're no longer a thing.
Or they don't.
I know they have them, but when I was younger, the open shows used to be more prevalent. They used to be. Now there's more championship shows and less open shows. So the opportunity, I think, now to judge open shows is a little bit limited. But when I started, there was at least a few a month where they would get maybe 300 to 400 dogs, and it was really good experience. Get your hands on dogs.
An open show that there's no points awarded, right?
Exactly. Yeah, so it was, there'll be no points towards the championship titles, it was more basically a show for provisional judges to get their hands on experience.
That's a great idea. Like, we have sanction matches, which are far and few between now, but it's the same idea. You know, it's you can get champion dogs at your open shows.
So we have a champion class at those shows, which is it's a great idea because the people that at the time that wanted experience at a show that doesn't necessarily they want to show against champions, they can go to these open shows and get the run of the ropes. So I judged. You have to judge at that time 250 dogs at the open shows, and also they introduced critiquing. Which was separate. So you would have to critique 250 dogs, and you would have to do that with a licensed judge or a mentor that's in the breed. So you would have...
that's no small feat. Critiquing is not as easy as people
think. No. And it was actually very good practice because now living in Europe, every show we're essentially critiquing dogs. So it's it was really good training, actually. I think it's a very important thing to learn when you're first starting, because writing critiques is difficult. And especially when you've only got a few minutes, when you've got a dog in front of you, and then to just say it out loud, and it can be quite a difficult thing to do in the beginning. So it was quite good learning from that, and it encouraged you to talk to different breeders and different judges when you're doing it. So it was good to learn different perspectives as well. But so when I was 18, and then you cannot, I don't know at the time, but I just remember you couldn't go for your license until you were 21, I think. I can't remember, but when I turned 21, that's when I went for my final practical exam. I fulfilled all the requirements, and with the practical exam, they will give you randomly two of the major breeds in the group, in the hound group. And I believe I had a class of Whippets and a class of Salukis. And then you also do a mini group, which is maybe five other breeds from the hound group. And you have three licensed judges, sometimes all-rounders, sometimes group specialists test you. They watch you as you go over them. They watch you as you place them, and then they question you afterwards for each time. So, and then you have to pass that before that. Right. So it was.
So 21 is young, but you fulfilled everything you needed to fulfill. It looks like it's as difficult as anywhere. So if not harder.
Yeah,
so.
I was very privileged to grow up with my family having dogs already. So I kind of grew up being around nice dogs and showing nice dogs, and it was. I had a very good advantage as far as that. But I, looking back now, I still, especially when I look at photos, I still feel like I was probably a little bit too young to go for it. Maybe, I think 25, maybe, I don't know. There's been other young judges in Australia before. There was another Afghan breeder. She got her license about the same age. David Roach, he was quite young judging too when I think he judged in England when he was in his 20s as well. So, but yeah, so.
So what are you licensed for over there? Are you all breeds?
So I started with the hound group in Australia, and I got the entire hound group. Before I left Australia, I was studying the toy breeds because my ex-girlfriends, both of them, they had toy breeds. So I kind of naturally was gravitated to the toy breed group, and I really didn't get a grasp on it. So I slowed down, and I didn't get disinterested, but I just felt I needed to really study the breeds before I would actually go for them. So I slowed down completely. So I got my hound group and then I just stopped. And it wasn't until recently I moved to Sweden. This past couple of years, I did my standard poodle test, which I got passed, and I did the Italian Greyhounds. Because in Australia, the Italian Greyhounds are in the toy group like you guys. But over here, they're in the sighthound group. So it was essential to get the Italian Greyhound here. Yeah, sure. And for me, I wasn't going to get them until I got a good grasp on them. The FCI standard is very different from the standard we had in Australia. So it took me many years to just grasp the look of the Italian Greyhounds over here. So those are the two breeds that I've added to the hound group.
Are you going to move on?
Breeds, I would like to get breeds that I've really had myself. There was a time where I had a Dalmatian, there was a time I had Shih Tzu, I've shown Papillons. There's breeds that I would like to go for individually, but I'm not
Gordon Setters.
Maybe not so much Gordon Setters, but I like the breeds that I judge at the moment, and at the moment, I still rather show my dogs as well. So showing is more satisfying. But also, I think there's a lot of value to judging as far as experience and especially for me, judging dogs completely changed my life. So,
well, I think it's incredible, like showing dogs and judging dogs, because it keeps things in perspective. Like I'll be out there. I show my own dogs still. Mm-hmm. I'll be out there, and if I lose a class, instead of just being angry, I can look at it and go, okay, I get it. You know, I understand without.
It's different being on the other side, I think. There's a lot more. It's so easy to stand on the outside of the ring and say, I would have done this, I would have done that. But it's very different when you've got a million things in your mind going through your head at once. And sometimes for me, I always just go with my heart in the end, because If I stuff it up, then I will look back and I won't forget that I will never forget the times I stuffed up, and I'll remember that, and the next time I'll just adjust slightly. But I always go with my heart when I'm judging, because I think that's, for me, my first impression is usually the right one. Usually,
I agree. You know, I think if Thor Brown taught me, if you sit there and stare at them, they don't get any better; they just get older. So you've got to
Absolutely. And also too, I can't remember who told me, but also too, if you're going to make a mistake, if you make it quickly, no one's going to know.
No one really. And they think you're right on, right?
Yeah. As long as you look confident. Confidence in the ring judging, I think, is a very important thing. And if you look confident with your decisions, I think that's a good way to go about it too.
Does Camilla judge?
No, she will. I don't think she'll ever.
No,
I don't think it's the furthest thing she wants to do. I think she gets all the satisfaction from breeding and showing and being in the ring. I think for her, it's judging for her seems too easy. I was talking to her today about it, and she said she's judging her dogs all the time and everyone else's dogs all the time. No one needs to, no one needs to pay her for her opinions. So
it's funny. Like when I first retired and started judging, I was still showing my own dogs, but it was hard because I was going every weekend showing dogs. So I wasn't going every weekend now. So it was a big change in your lifestyle. But I think it's important to have that I'm doing both. It's important for me. And it sounds like it's important for you, because it does keep things in perspective. I really enjoy seeing the dogs and working with the dogs.
No, for me, there was a period when we started breeding the standard poodle litters. We kind of were very cold on breeding Afghans continuing forward. We were kind of very full on with the poodles. We felt like we knew what we were doing and we were doing well. And there wasn't any Afghans at that point that kind of excited us. And then I had a judging assignment in France doing the Afghan National there. And I had two dogs come in my ring. And one dog we imported ourselves, which is the sire of Spencer. I borrowed him for a couple of years. And then my winner of the day, we got a female, a daughter from him, and it completely changed our breeding program for the better. And if I wasn't a judge, judging that one show, and for me, that's the main reason why I like to judge, is because you can, judging breeding stock, you get to see if you can find something to help your kennel. And it completely changed our Afghan life around. So it's very important.
Great. So I never touched on this earlier. What about mentors? Obviously your family, but you must have other ones.
Showing wise.
Let's start off with showing wise. So because you're to watch you, you're a very good handler. So it's fun to watch you. And
there was a few people specifically. Obviously my dad, he did quite well. He had top dog all breeds with his Afghan, and he won many, many best in shows. One of his dogs had 90 plus best in shows, and I watched him a lot. And I would never acknowledge at the time that I was learning from him. I think I was a little stubborn, so I would kind of look at others, and because maybe I didn't appreciate, because I saw him every week, so I was like, oh, right. you could do this right, you know, you could change things. And there was another handler that my dad would use sometimes for our dogs, and his name was Kerry Pope. I don't know if you remember Kerry, but I used to follow him around at all the shows. I must have been the most annoying kid following him around. I used to see
at one point.
So. Oh no, but like I could only imagine he must have been the most patient person in the world for me, because I would ask him stupid questions like, why are you brushing like this? Why is the lead this way? I would ask him questions all day long, and he always had the time of day for me. And so Kerry was one of my big influences. And there was another influence handler Michael O'Callaghan. Sadly he passed away a few years ago, but he was also another Afghan hound handler in Australia. He won best in show at the Royal Melbourne show, and his technique of handling Afghans was very fierce. He was very one of those handlers that asks for a win, so I kind of took pieces from him and took pieces from Kerry and kind of learned from my dad. And I would kind of watch Afghan handlers, especially in Australia at the time, and still now, Afghan handlers are some of the best handlers you'll ever be in the ring against. To show Afghans, you really need a lot of patience and a lot of talent. And I used to just watch all these Afghan breeders at the specialty shows come in the big open class with 20, 30 dogs, and they'd be all stepping out in front of each other one by one, see if get the judges' attention the most. So you have to kind of learn quickly when you're showing against them. So that was showing wise. That was my major influences.
And judging.
So judging influences. I was really similar to like junior handlers with the judging. I was kind of pushed into it a little bit. There was bearded collie breeders, Jill and Keith Cornchy. Keith was an all-rounder judge, very old-fashioned, like a tartan cap, very, very real gentleman kind of guy. And Jill was a very, very wonderful person, and they kind of pushed me to doing my judging. And their friend Lynn Norman was also another all-rounder. They were in charge of the early stages of judges training, and they said, just come and listen, come and learn. If it's for you, it's for you. If it's not, then you know, you can maybe learn something you can take home and apply to your breeding. Sure. So they pushed me in the beginning. And of course, my dad as well, he was judging a lot in America, and I went to every show with him no matter what. So I would watch dad judging many, many times, sometimes filming with the old camcorder. And then after the shows, I would go back and watch and see what he did. And so they were my early influences for sure.
This next question, it could be, I want two answers.
Yeah.
You've seen a lot of dogs. Yep. How old are you now, Brett?
I just turned 38.
38. So you've been this in your whole life. So you've seen a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
And as a judge, are there dogs that you've seen, maybe not in person, but on video and in magazines, that you wished you had the opportunity to judge? Could be dogs from the past, could be dogs in the future.
Yeah, I watch a lot of, on YouTube. There's a lot of old Afghan national specialties from America, and I would have loved to have just been there in the early 90s in America, where you had so many wonderful Afghans like Triumph of Grandeur and Taco, and even a little bit later on, there was some of my favorite bitches like Trist and Izzy. There was Afghans were so strong in quality back then, and I would have killed to have my hands on a lot of those dogs just to see what they feel like under the coat. And there's only so much you can see from the videos. It's even the, you know, photos is one thing, videos is another, but being in person and feeling the atmosphere of them moving around and how dogs, certain dogs lift in that final moments is something I would kill to have been back. I was technically at those shows, but I could barely speak. I was still in a stroller at that time. So even though I was there, I just couldn't comprehend it. So, right. But those are some of the dogs I would have killed to have my hands on, for sure.
As a judge or a handler?
Both. Both. I was quite forward. Some of the shows that my dad was judging, I would go up to some famous breeders, because I used to read the old Afghan Hound Review magazines. My parents had just about every issue, so they were kind of like my Bibles. I would read them all the time and see pictures. And I remember in California, dad was judging, and Lou Guerrero and Hank, they were there, and I recognized him from, he had a bitch called Pistol, and I'm like, oh, that's him. And they had maybe a young bitch there, and I said, can I take her around? And they're sure, and they would let me take her around. I remember going up to Betsy Huffnagel and just grabbing some dogs and just running around with them. And some of the Afghan people, I don't know what I was thinking now, I don't know how, you know, what I was thinking back then, because who's this kid from Australia? And, you know, they didn't know who I was, and I'm just going in, can you give me your dog for a few seconds and run around with it? So, but a lot of the Afghan people were very, very kind to kids. Even Michael was kind to I wish my older brother Reese, he's not showing dogs, but when he was younger, he came with us to the national specialties in America, and he actually got a personal handling lesson from Michael with TR. And I'm so jealous that my older brother got to have Triumph on the lead and run down and back and practice the you know, the fancy down and back, and he got to do all that stuff, and I can appreciate it through the photos and the videos that we have, but I would kill to have had that moment. But no, so Afghan people at that time were very friendly and very welcoming to everybody. They were great.
Is there any dogs besides Afghans that you wished you could have shown? Certain dogs?
There was one dog I remember, Carlos, who was showing the standard dachshunds. There was a dog he was showing, Chunky Monkey, and it was it was unlike any dachshund I've ever, it was a standard long hair, it was unlike any dog I've ever seen in my life. It was the most beautiful show dog I've ever seen. He was loose lead, the dog was always alert, always on attentive. It was the most coolest look. I've never ever in my life wanted to touch a dachshund, but when I saw that dog running around the ring, I'm like, that's something I would love to take back home with me. But that was one dog I remember vividly. That was quite a nice dog.
Yeah, and he does an incredible job with all his dogs. I just had at a show, I was judging a bunch of his dogs, and he is so engaged with his dogs. He's fun to watch, you know.
I went to Westminster 1 year, and I was staying at the pen, and I saw him all the time in the hallways with the dogs. He was always with the dogs one-on-one, and I think that's the reason why the dogs love him so much. It seems like he does everything with them, so of course they're going to love him. So, but he's very talented with what he does with the dogs to get, because it's not easy getting a dog to show a couple of times a month, let alone 4 or 5 shows every week. So that's a whole nother level. That's something else.
Yeah, for sure. So what's next for Brett and Camilla?
For us, right now we've got a young poodle that's quite exciting.
Is this Austin you're talking about?
Yeah, this is Austin.
How old is Austin?
He's 14 months old, still in juniors, junior class.
His pictures look great, so I obviously haven't seen him.
We're very blessed to have this dog. He was bred in Greece, and he's already won 4 best in shows. In Sweden, winning best in shows is hard. We have quite large numbers of shows. Usually we have 2 to 3 judges throughout the day. For the breed and the group and the best, so you get different opinions. So to win best in shows in Sweden can be quite difficult. We have some really talented breeders over here, and to win, he's had 4 groups and 4 best in shows from those 4 groups, which is just phenomenal for a young dog. And so it's kind of nice to have something to look forward to in the future. And actually tomorrow, a good friend of ours, a breeder from Italy, Roberto, Zenos Kennels with the Afghans, he's bringing a puppy for us. So that's something for us to look forward to. Camilla, they had some frozen semen from a dog that we loaned him. So we've got that now. We bred a litter of Afghans about a year and a half ago, and nothing for us that we could keep. So we don't breed so often. So for us, I think we're lucky to breed a litter once every 2-3 years. I think I mentioned before with winning at the World Dog Show, both in Helsinki, both times, I think it was about a 10 or 11 year gap. And for Camilla's family, I think it's only 3 generations in between that they've bred. So I think I'd rather breed a quality dog than a lot of dogs. So I think it's hard, and it's also hard to sell puppies too right now. So breeding for us every couple of years is definitely for us it's the best option.
I have one more question for you.
Yeah, sure.
If you got to meet Brett at, let's say, 18 or 20 again, is there any advice you'd give Brett now?
I wouldn't want to change anything other than maybe I wish me and Camilla had kids sooner. We kind of put it off a little bit long, but I'm happy. We're very lucky to have a daughter right now, and I kind of wish maybe we had more. That's one thing. But as a breeder, I wish I could tell myself to not be so picky. When I was younger, I had my first winning Afghan bitch. And I was very, very picky with who to breed her to. And in the end, we ended up breeding her to one of our own dogs. And it worked out just fine. We got nice puppies. But the lines that we have now, I had the opportunity to kind of get into those lines back then. And I kind of was poo-pooing them because there was a certain look or a certain style that I just didn't really necessarily thought I needed at that time, or we needed at the time. And I kind of pushed away a couple of stud dogs that I kind of wish maybe now with a few years under my belt, I'm thinking, what a dummy. I there was a couple of the stud dogs I could have used, and maybe we could have had something a lot sooner than waiting 15 years. So that's one thing I would tell myself.
Excellent. All right. So where are you two off to next?
So now, next weekend, we've got a weekend off. So okay. We're looking forward to that. The last three weekends in a row, we were quite busy. We had the World Show, and then the next week we had a show in Sweden, and then last week another show. So it's nice to have a weekend off, and we can maybe clean up the house a little bit, do something else.
Well, I appreciate your time, Brett, and I wish you both all the luck in the world, but for some reason I think you don't really need that much luck.
We've been very lucky.
Can't hurt, though.
We've been very lucky. Very lucky.
Yeah. Well, you make your own luck, as far as I'm concerned. So.
Yeah. After this past year, I kind of I have a philosophy now. I will things into existence. I really believe it now. If you really want something, you can kind of will it in, you can make it happen. I don't know how, but it works. I worked it out.
Well, thanks for your time, man. It was good to see you. I saw you a few months ago, I think, when you were in Canada.
In Erie Shores, yeah. I didn't know you were going to be there. It was a nice surprise to see you for a familiar face.
Yeah, I went one day to watch, and I think I ended up there 2 days, but We spoke for a while there. And you judged an Afghan specialty. So
yeah, that was a wonderful experience. I was so happy I did that. That was really wonderful. Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Well, thank you so much, buddy. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
And hopefully, I'm sure our paths will cross again.
Yeah, hopefully.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brett. And that was a great interview. I had so much fun. It was just like having a chat with a friend. It was wonderful. So if you like what you're seeing here, make sure you press the like, share, and subscribe button. And don't forget about the podcast. It comes out every Thursday, The Dog Show Drive. Take care, guys.